consultants, members of the audience, those at home, welcome to the fourth day of the hearings, public hearings, with respect to the Church of Scientology. We've heard this will probably be our fourth and final day of the city's position. We do hope that the Scientologists will take advantage of their time starting Monday and give their side of the issue and present their documents, also their witnesses. We will be here Monday, anticipating their presence here. Before we start, I'd like to start this meeting with a prayer given by Commissioner Jim Cultivank, and then rise him for the Pledge of Allegiance, led by Police Chief Sidney Klein. Would you like to have us rise here?
No. Dear Father, we ask you for the strength and the ability to get through these very difficult times. We ask for your love and also your help in deciding what is the best for the people and the citizens of the city of Clearwater. We hope that we follow your way and that every day we have a new challenge and we can meet it with great minds and with conviction. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Flynn, do you have any comments you'd like to make before we start these proceedings, sir?
I do, Mayor. Mayor LaChair and members of the Commission, I'd like to make some brief comments about some of the things I stated in my opening that are particularly applicable to the evidence today. And that these comments basically relate to the purposes of these hearings, which are not prosecutorial. We're not here to collect criminal evidence concerning the Church of Scientology in terms of trying to obtain indictments against individuals or of the organization. What we're here to do is to determine whether or not there have been deceptive sales and trade practices in connection with a number of different items of evidence that have been adduced already before this commission will continue to be presented today. And those basically involve deception concerning Mr. Hubbard's background upon which members have relied or would not have joined if they'd known about it. Confidentiality of auditing information. Deception in the purposes, goals, and practices of the organization. Deception concerning the article or device warning in the case that I referred to in my opening, which we will be getting in today. Deception concerning legal documents and the legal status of individuals who are entering or leaving the church. The conditions at Fort Harrison, and both as they actually exist and as they are represented to individuals who are coming to the city, and some issues pertaining to the education of children. With regard to all of those issues, it is important to keep in mind that in order to prove that or present sufficient evidence before this commission that those practices have been taking place, the policies of the corporation have got to be examined, and they have got to be examined over a long period of time to determine whether they are sustained policies, policies that not only appear in writing but in practice. And the only appropriate procedure for this commission to follow is to determine whether or not those practices or those policies are actually practiced. It's to determine whether they're standardized and uniform. And the focus of that inquiry is whether or not they have been taking place over a long period of time as applied to a different cross-section of people by which this commission can draw the inference that in fact they are uniform policies, they're uniformly practiced in many different locations, including the city of Clearwater, and that they do involve, they do involve the deceptive practices about which this commission is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Do you have a witness? Will you please be sworn in, Madam Clerk?
Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
Give us your name, please.
Lavinda Van Schaik.
Ms. Van Schaik, I'm going to ask you the same basic five-sentence questions I will ask every witness that we will hear during this proceedings. And they are, number one, are you appearing today and testifying under oath voluntarily?
Yes, I am.
Have you been paid by anyone for your testimony other than expenses coming to Clearwater?
No.
Do you have a lawsuit against the Church of Scientology?
Yes, I do.
Does the Church of Scientology have a lawsuit against you?
Several.
Has anyone suggested to you that you should state anything but the truth, or has anyone suggested that you change your testimony for any reason?
No.
Thank you. Would you like to make a statement, or would you like to go over what your story is?
I'd rather start. I don't want to get into the organization, basically, as to what L. Ron Hubbard is, because there's a lot of testimony that has already been done on that. Basically, what I want to get into is a brief history. I started in Scientology when I was 16 years old. I started on staff when I was 21 years old. Approximately 9 years of my life went into Scientology. I currently do have a lawsuit against Scientology, and they have had several lawsuits against me that are still pending. Fair game. I've had my house bugged, my telephone bugged. I've had several setups that have happened to me since I started the lawsuit. My origination of why I got basically into the lawsuit was because, one, the cover-up of Quentin's death in Las Vegas, which was L. Ron Hubbard's son, which is still a mystery. Two, my brother-in-law shot his brains out with a gun. There are other cases that are similar to that. Three, the misrepresentation of what actually Scientology was doing.
Would you like to expound on any of these particular points?
Oh, basically, what I relied on when I got into Scientology, I thought it was like a VISTA organization. I was recruited under the deception that we were going to do exploration in Egypt. I thought it was a scientific thing that we're involved in. The fraud that Hubbard was a nuclear physicist and a scientist, we were recruited in. There was quite a few of us at that time that were going to school and at the University of Las Vegas, and we thought that basically what the group was like VISTA, some kind of health organization that was doing research in different areas, and we didn't realize what we were getting into.
Can you tell us a little more about the misuse of auditing?
The first day that
I... Suffering family relationships.
The first day I started court proceedings, well, actually, before I started court proceedings, my PC folders were sent to the press. Plus, all the information in my PC folders was sent as public knowledge for anyone to have access to. It has been a lie since day one that your PC folders are confidential.
Excuse me, what's a PC folder again?
PC folders, any information that you personally, if it's an upset with your husband, something you did when you were younger, something very, if anything personal that you have in your life, that you wouldn't even maybe tell mom and dad. It's kind of like sitting down and doing a confession to a Catholic priest. And it's supposed to be very confidential. It is not. It is public information. And that was another one of the originations that actually started it. It is not something, people that are in Scientology get the idea that your PC folder is confidential. It is not.
What kind of relationship did this have on your family?
Divorce, split between parents. Of course, they had me disconnect from my parents. A child who is now 11 and stabilized, who was very unstable, which is my daughter. Relationships between my family. I was disconnected from my family for so many years, it took me a long time to kind of build that. Back up again. How I was made to disconnect was as I was taken by a lady named Pam Bevan to a room and put under auditing process with another gentleman, and it was like what you would be called kidnapped. And after thorough processing and getting out of the room that I was in, and this was 2 weeks, no one else was there but these two people, I disconnected from my entire family. I was told that this was the next process, removed my money from the bank accounts and gave them all the money that I had. Oh, I signed waivers like most everyone else did. Waivers that I would not attack, threaten, or sue Scientology. Because I felt that my parents were enemies. I was put through an auditing process to, my parents were not the kind of people that I wanted around me. And I'd like to also state with that fact, my mother is a counselor and a psychologist, and my father is a retired Methodist minister. And my father had, when he was in the ministry, very briefly, a client come to him that was involved with Mayor Gazzara's setup that told him,
right. Yeah, that may be considered hairstyle.
All right, we can't use that for legal reasons.
It's a separate issue that we're not here today to discuss.
Yeah, it's not only a question of hairstyle, it could be a question of confidentiality of the priest penitent privilege, which is present in the state of Florida.
We will not hear that. Can you tell me something about living? And you were in Clearwater at one time living.
Yes, I was.
Can you tell me about the sanitary conditions and the what they had for children, for adults, and tell me about what it was like to have especially young children, like an infant in the city of Clearwater, in the hotel, and conditions of the RPF and the EPF.
At the time I was in Clearwater, there was a hepatitis epidemic that was being covered up, contagious.
When was that, please?
It was in 1977. Through 1976 and 77, people that were coming from California and Las Vegas area to Clearwater were coming back very ill. And at that time, I had no idea why until I got to Clearwater myself. I was in Clearwater for 8 weeks. The first day that I got to Clearwater, I became ill because of the food conditions that they had in the hotel, reported to what they call their medical officer, and noticed that downstairs people were getting inoculations for different things. At that time, that second day, I didn't know until actually about 3 weeks later that there was actually a hepatitis cover-up going on.
All right, what about the children?
The children were kept. My room happened to be next to the nursery. And the nursery was, there were two young kids that were like 13 and 14 that were watching the children. Because I could hear crying, the children were separated from the parents, and I heard crying all night long. And being a mother, I made it a habit to look into those things. The kids were sick with flu. There wasn't any kind of clean area. The conditions were that all babies that were crying were left in one room to cry because they had reactive minds, and they were considered suppressive babies. And all kids that smiled and that were nice were left in another room, and which was really kind of a horrible experience for me as a mother. The other incident was, and another reason why they moved most of the children off of the base at that time, is there was a child, because of where the parking lot was situated at the back end of the Fort Harrison, the children were right next to the parking lot, and a child got out of that area and got killed behind that parking lot area. And that's when they made the decision that they had to move the children, one, because of the publicity. And the children are still in the city somewhere. At the time I was there, they were making the big move of getting the children out of the Fort Harrison. And the parents that had babies were very upset with the fact because they only had an hour for lunch, and they would not be able to see their children because where they were putting the children was an hour and a half, to 2 hour drive, and they couldn't have that hour. See, parents were allowed 1 hour with their children at lunchtime, and that was it. And that hour meant that by the time they got there and had to be back on post again, they couldn't see their children. So the big upset was that the parents wanted to do something about it, but they actually couldn't. There wasn't, when the parents got off, a lot of the Sea Org members got off the ships, they started having babies because they were not allowed to have babies when they were on ship. And as a consequence, you had this overpopulation of small children. There was at least 15 small babies that were ranging between 3 or 4 weeks old, and I think the oldest was like 2 years old, tops there. And they were all young children in one confined area.
Why were the parents separated from their children, specifically their infants? How can a... I'm not sure I understand about a suppressive infant. How do you know an infant is suppressive? Just simply because he cries?
Yes. They're going through what's called a PTS. It's called a potential trouble source re-stimulation. And the way they audit the process is that the child must have somebody suppressive. If it's not the parent, someone in the immediate area that is suppressive to the child. So he is being re-stimulated, and so those children were put into separate rooms and just left to cry. And the basis of it is that they had the children, the babies had to handle their own type of thing. And the reason the parents were split because it's nothing but work, work, work at the Fort Harrison. And the time that they saw their children was dinner break, and that's it. And then if they had liberty on Saturday, you're talking about working 15, 20 hours a day, and that's it. And there is no human relationship between the parents, basically. And then they got separated from that. The idea is to separate you from your family. And if you have children and you have that instinct, the children are little LRHs, as someone previously said.
As these children got to be 5 or 6 years old, did they attend school? At least a public school system, as we know it.
Some do, some don't.
Did the ever... authorities and the Board of Education ever question or wonder or come by to check on the educational opportunities or mandatory requirements of the Scientology children?
Not while I was at Clearwater, and I did speak to kids that were the Commodore messengers that had not attended school. And one of the things why they were moving the children from the area, so the city particularly couldn't keep a handle on how many children were being born in Scientology, so when they became school age, no one would be able to find out whether they should be attending school or not.
How was that small child killed that you said was killed in the back?
It was accidentally run over by a car.
What about the RPF and the EPF?
I made a tour of the Fort Harrison while I was there, and I saw every single part of the building. The RPF was at the end of the stairwell on the floor at the very end, not on the upper floors because all public was on the upper floors, but on the bottom floors at the very far end. It's like a closet cubicle that 10 to 15 people were stacked up on each other. It's like a sweat box. It looked like a small concentration camp. There was basically, I tried to talk to someone that was in the RPF that we were old friends, and he couldn't talk to me. They're not allowed to talk. Constant running. Chipping paint. At that time, they were chipping paint off of cement. And when they finished that, someone would come down and drop some more paint on the cement, and they'd re-chip paint off the cement. And that was a big project at that particular time, was how much paint they could chip off the sidewalk. This was their major project. And as far as, it didn't matter where they were, female or men, the same thing was going on, but the conditions were really gross. No cleanliness, smelled bad. At that time, they were wearing all green, and I remember that really stuck out in my mind, and dark blue to signify that we were not allowed as public people to talk to these people. It was just one of the conditions. We were screened when we came in. And we were told that anybody in the RPF was going through heavy conditions orders and were not allowed to have communication. I had been through a similar thing called EPF in Las Vegas, so I'm very familiar with this whole process.
You were here from almost the beginning, then. the beginning of the existence of the Church of Scientology in Clearwater?
No, I was in Las Vegas at the time that Clearwater was set up. I was not here when Clearwater began.
You say set up, that was...
I was in Las Vegas. When the Fort Harrison was put here, we got orders in Las Vegas that the Fort Harrison was here.
I'll ask you the same question I've asked at least one other, and if maybe you can answer it. Why Clearwater, and why do they come in under the United Churches of Florida and not what they really are?
One of the reasons is you have to look at the area. It's basically an
elderly
area, very quiet. They figured that the people over a certain age bracket would not stand up and oppose what they were doing. Plus, the area is kind of, you know, a quiet little city, and they figured that no one in the city would make any kind of outcry, and that if they did, you know, they could deal with someone over 50, because they figured, you know, a few years down the line that they were not going to be here and they wouldn't really have to deal with them.
Didn't realize that elderly people would get more conservative of age?
They didn't realize conservativeness that was really in the area.
Just being quiet.
Yeah, they didn't actually see that they were going to have any problems in this area.